all the information for the entire Northern Nevada area.
They are bringing more illegals every day.
On one radio station.
At this point, I just kind of assume every politician is dirty.
Welcome to FM News Talk 99.1 and 92.3 FM. News, talk, truth, truth.
All right, so here he is. Hello, Mr. Joe Hart.
John, good to see you.
Good to
be here.
Good to see you, my friend. Joe is here, folks. Phone number's open. You're early.
Oh, am I?
Are you? Didn't I say 10:30? I thought I did.
10:30 to 11.
No kidding.
I think so, but I'm here. I'm flexible.
Listen, everybody knows you would be right and I would be wrong. So I guess you're right. 10 o'clock to 10:30.
You're stuck with me.
Yeah, well, anyway. So how was it at Channel 4 or News 4 last night, yesterday? Did you get to watch the splashdown?
You know, I was off yesterday. I wasn't working. I was at a wedding, a family event. So I missed it. But I've been reading about it this morning, and sounds like everything went well. You know, it's so scary when you think about what they're coming through as they're coming through the atmosphere. But everything went well. It's a proud moment that way.
I would think even at a family gathering, they would have the TV set there.
No.
Because I thought everybody was watching this.
Yeah. You know, my son's actually in San Diego this week and visiting. And I said, watch for Artemis 2 coming down. You know, he was at a wedding as well down there. So, no, everything where I was focused on the event. So I had to miss out.
So I'm interested in knowing, you know, we all had icons, you know, which may have led us to our careers. You know, I know lawyers who tell me Perry Mason made them want to be lawyers and everything. But who was the television anchor you watched every night? The one where you said, you know, I want to be that person and set you on your path. Who was it? Because everybody I know in this business, me included, as a little boy, I watched Huntley and Brinkley every night.
Yeah.
You know, there, and it was funny, Joe. Back then, you were either a Walter Cronkite family or a Huntley Brinkley family, and I was Huntley Brinkley, and that's who I wanted to be.
Going way back,
there were a few oddballs out there who watched Howard K. Smith. You know, ABC wasn't a big deal back then. But who did you first kind of idolize to get to do what you do?
You know, there was a guy, a reporter at the local station in the Bay Area, KTVU, which is one amazing station. His name is Rob Roth, and he was a reporter. I would watch him, and I liked his stories, and I wrote him a letter. I sent him a letter. I think I was in college, and he wrote back, and he gave me some tips on getting started, and I thought that was so great because that's a pretty high level of local news, you know, KTVU in Oakland. And this guy took the time to write back and give me some pointers on how to get started. And I always appreciated that. That was great. I hope.
Did he invite you to the TV station? What was your first time visiting a TV station?
Well, it's funny. My first time was after I sent out a bunch of resumes in college and nobody responded. I went up to a little station in the wine country in Santa Rosa, KFTY. And they said, yeah, the news director will meet with you, little Channel 50. And I drove an hour up the, you know, 101, got there, and he wasn't there. He'd gone to a luncheon or something. But they said, you can come back. Anyway, I kind of pestered him, and that was my first foray into news, really, was this small little independent TV station in Santa Rosa, Sonoma County, a beautiful community, wonderful place, and just the best place to learn the business. It was just small. We were covering news. In some ways,
you were doing everything. That's the best way to learn, isn't it?
I mean, literally, a staffer would turn to you and say, hey, we need this, you know, and you're an intern at the time. You just, and so it was the best way to learn in the best environment.
I actually am kind of shocked that Santa Rosa has a TV station.
You know, it was news at the time, struggled over the years. It was locally owned, and I think it's still there, but I'm not even sure. But this would have been in the late 80s or 90s, and it was just, it was a great community program, a great TV station. The community really embraced it, and like you said, it was the perfect place to learn and get started in the business, and kind of set me on my path, I feel like.
Our phone number, 775-884-9910, Mr. Joe Hart from News 4. You've been a mainstay there for 29 years.
Yeah, John. Yeah.
29 years at one station. Good Lord, how many neckties do you own? Right?
I do my best to keep updating them so people don't get bored. But it's been a great run. I'm so proud of it and so grateful at the same time. You know, not everybody gets to be around that long. And, management changes and ownership changes and people's tastes change. And I'm grateful that I still get the opportunity to do what I love to do every day.
Do they have or do you have anything planned to celebrate your 30th year at News 4? No, that's a milestone. Very rare. You're absolutely right. Thank with you. All the changes and everything.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure there's nothing planned at this point, but that's fine. You know what? I'm low-key that way. I like to do the job. I like to do the work day in and day out and do these stories and dig in and go to bat for people, get some results. That's what I enjoy. I don't need a big party or celebration. If I just get to keep doing it day in and day out, that's the reward for me, honestly.
All right, I'm keeping you from your coffee. So let me just go ahead, drink the coffee.
It's good. I'm
going to talk for like a minute here about News 4.
Oh, good.
Drink your coffee, Joe. I keep interrupting you. But you are my station. News 4, you guys have the best bench. You have the best staff. Mm-hmm. I love Anthony. Kim Burrows. I think you and Kim Burrows are really the only true TV investigative reporters that we have.
I think so.
Yeah. There you go. Take that.
And Kim
credit.
Does a great job, and the best part of it is the station and the company are just fully supportive of that.
Well, you can tell. Mission. You can tell because if you go to the website, your website of the station, you got a ton of people in that newsroom.
Uh-huh.
I thought the trend was like skeleton crews and paring down. And you have like dozens of people on that news page at the Channel 4 website.
We're going strong these days. It's great. I mean, there's not at certain times or on a weekend. The staffing is a little bit leaner, but mm-hmm. but we do have a robust staff, and we have a great mix of people with a lot of experience and young kids coming up and learning too. Mm-hmm. My son works at the station. He's 26. He's a producer in the morning. He works with Chris Murphy in the mornings. So it's a great mix, but there's that vibe. There's enthusiasm every day for people learning and the people that, like you talked about, Kim and Shelby and I, that love the business and have been around a long time.
Also, Matt Monroe.
Matt's great.
Very decent guy you have there. Ben Margeau, top political reporter. Very good lineup. You just have so many. And it's really what first? Now, we talked about Santa Rosa. That was the start. Then you went to, was it Vegas? You were in Vegas for a while, right?
I was in Vegas. First, I made a stop up in the Tri-Cities in southeastern Washington. It's near Walla Walla, just to give you an idea on the map there. And I spent a couple of the years there just kind of starting to be an anchor and, you know, so green, so unpolished at the time, but kind of learning the skill, learning the ropes, learning what was important, refining things a little bit. So spent 2 years there. I think it was about an 8-person newsroom there. A nice community, and it was nice. And then I came to Reno the first time, actually, and worked over at Channel 8 in 1995.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
With Tad Dunbar and Ed Pierce. Uh-huh. And then went to Vegas and spent a couple of years down in Vegas. At a really good station down there, but it just wasn't the right fit for me, and came back to Reno in 1997 to Channel 4 then.
Okay, yeah, I was in Vegas 10 years. I was at the ABC station, and do you ever go back to these places? Do you ever go back to – I guess not.
I went to a reunion in Santa Rosa a couple of years ago, and that was fun to be back, you know, where everything had started for me.
Yeah.
So that was nice. I have not been back to the Tri-Cities. It's hard to get to, you know, I go down to Vegas occasionally, but I mean, Vegas, I was there in the mid 90s when it was just kind of starting to take off, as you know, and it's just like, you don't even recognize it now.
No, it's like LA, Joe.
Yeah.
No, really it is. And the old favorite places I love, Bonnie Springs. You know, go up, you know, I didn't drink at all when I was in Vegas, except for the final years. But when I was ever stressed, I'd go to Bonnie Springs and pet the animals.
Yeah.
That's gone.
Well, when I lived there, I felt like you could still drive up to the resorts on the strip. And like that access is totally gone. You can't even just pull off the strip into these resorts.
They have this huge, monstrous concert venue. It's right there at Tropicana on the strip. I think it's a T-Mobile.
Okay.
I think, okay, whenever there's a concert there, you cannot move anywhere on Tropicana or the Strip. It's insane.
Yeah.
We were stuck there for an hour. Now they're talking about this baseball stadium where the Tropicana used to be.
Right, for the
that's
A's.
That's going to be pure hell.
Yeah.
I don't get it. Why not just put it where a couple of blocks away? Anyway, I got to go to the phone. John is calling from Sparks with questions for Mr. Joe Hart from News 4. Hey, John, I'm glad you called. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, thanks. Joe, real quick question. Can you talk a little bit about Channel 4, Channel 11, and Channel 21, and what's so special about an all-sports network in Northern Nevada compared to other markets similar to ours, say a Boise or wherever else, Albuquerque, et cetera? Why is it so important to have an all-sports channel all the time?
Well, I think there's a lot of people in town that like to follow the university with all the programs going on in the Mountain West, and whether it's football, basketball, those are high-profile programs, or the other sports as well. And Nevada Sportsnet, NSN, I mean, they almost exclusively cover Wolfpack sports. It's just the coverage is you know really impressive, I think. And you're not going to get that anywhere else. And for a local company, a local station like us, like Channel 4, to invest and commit to that kind of coverage and that programming, I think it's awesome. It's so impressive. You know, Chris Murray, you know, has so many years in the area and the business covering sports and the rest of the staff there that they have. You know, if you like Wolfpack sports, and I think a lot of people around here do, then NSN is where you go to watch it. And not just the reporting on it, but the live coverage, the live games that they telecast as well. Does that help?
Sir, is there something you really missed that was on, what, Channel 21, is it?
No, not at all. I was just curious if Joe ever took a stab at doing sports. And if he hasn't, would he want to?
I think it's a little late to start for me. But, you know, I did. I did a fun fill-in stint when I was in Las Vegas at KLAS. And they had a situation where a couple of the sportscasters traveled with the UNLV football team. So there's a Friday night where they wouldn't have a sports person. So I did the Friday nights. And it was kind of fun. I was probably not very good at it, but I enjoyed it. I did.
Was this recently?
No, it was so in the 90s when I was in
the 90s. Okay.
Yeah.
John, thanks for calling from Sparks. The whole topic of like our broadcast television history in this town is fascinating in itself, at least to us,
yeah.
You and I. Not so sure about the rest of y'all. But anyway, we're going to take a break and be back with Joe Hart from News 4. I'm John Potter, live and local, back very shortly on 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 10:18.
The talk starts here. Get the conversation going. Call now.
Hello?
99.1 KKFT. For Smith and Mason Valley, 92.3 FM Talk.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back, John Potter. Live and local every Saturday 9 to noon on these radio stations, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk. It's Joe Hart from News 4 with us, and you can call 775-884-9910, setting up our own Ask Joe here. And speaking of which, do you have any favorite Ask Joe stories, which are primarily investigative and responding to people's private concerns and sometimes public too?
Yeah, that's the nature of it, is just what's on people's minds. If they can't get help, if they can't get answers, and they turn to us.
But more and more people can't get help. You know, how easy is it nowadays to call up an official and get them on the phone, and everybody tells you to do it online. Well, you know, the online doesn't answer all the questions. But anyway, tell us about your favorite Ask Joe stories.
Let's see. I will tell you that maybe the most rewarding story this past year was we looked into this sewer spill in Sparks. And it really came from a neighbor who you know, said he thought that something was wrong in their neighborhood.
That was the apartment complex that broke a sewer line.
Yeah, they connected it wrong when they were building it, the pipe.
Yeah.
So, and there was a spill, and, you know, went into the storm drain, which leads to the Truckee River, and they fixed it. But the key was nobody ever reported it to the state, to NDEP, because these are our state regulators. They're in charge. So they need to know if there's some kind of spill or environmental hazard. And they weren't told in this case. So it was just maybe a miscommunication, call it that, between the city of Sparks, the developer. But anyway, we started looking into it and really doing, I think, really thorough investigative reporting on what happened, how this happened, what needs to happen. And then a bill got introduced in Carson City at the legislature and passed unanimously to require this kind of reporting. Now it's in the law that, that if there's a spill, you have to report it to the state agency.
Your story triggered that?
Yeah. Yeah, I was, which is so
awesome.
Gratifying. Yeah, which is so gratifying. And it passed. Senator Ira Hansen introduced it. He's a plumber and he lives in Sparks. Yeah. And he introduced the bill. And it's funny, I went down to the legislature to cover another issue, another story, and somebody just involved just happened to mention that, oh, yeah, we introduced a bill based on your story that you did the other day. I didn't even know.
God bless you.
Yeah. No, it's just super gratifying. And, John, it just gets back to the point of the stuff we do is important and helps get things fixed and addressed and makes me so proud.
Some of the Ask Joe stories make me mad. Did the lady who just bought that house and the roof was really bad?
Oh, yeah.
And the construction company, the construction company wouldn't respond, and the contractors board would not take any action.
Not that we knew of, not that they would tell us. Yeah, that was frustrating. It was, this family had put all their savings, all their money into this dream house, basically.
It was a beautiful house.
House. It had a flat roof.
Yeah.
And I'm not a construction person or engineer, but it seemed like there were some issues with this roof, and they had all of a sudden, I mean, I saw videos I showed in the story of just water pouring through this roof soon after they'd moved in. So why it wasn't caught in the inspection and that kind of thing. There were a lot of questions, and I think the one thing that would have helped in this case was for the contractors board to be transparent and tell us about the process, tell the public what they're looking into. And that's not how they operate. That's not their policy. Everything is kept confidential until there is some finding of fault. And they didn't make one in that case.
Are there some public departments or city, county, some that are more responsive to you than others? Do you get stonewalled? I imagine you do sometimes, right?
Oh, yeah. You know, and then that's where persistence comes in. You know, I mean, if you talk about responsive, I mean, it just depends. We call, you know, Governor Lombardo, and he will not do interviews. You know, so we've reached out to him on different issues and stories, and they don't make him available.
How about Mark Amodate? Was he to you?
Yes, he was to me. A couple issues,
I've heard complaints that he didn't hold open forums with people and public meetings.
Yeah. I always found him available and accessible, and we were doing, you know, they were tearing down that railroad building in Sparks.
Yes,
you
did that.
And that became pretty controversial, and he came to the station and did an interview and talked to us about the steps he was trying to take to get some attention and get prevent that from happening. So he's been great. And, you know, and at the local level, these agencies and public information people, I think everybody's pretty good about being open. Some need to be prodded a little more because you have to be honest. If you're doing investigative reporting, sometimes it's information that people don't want to come out, you know, and so they're not going to, you know, make it easy for you necessarily. But that's where public records requests comes in, and you get the documents. And I would say, for the most part, I mean, I'm working on a story down in Carson City right now where we're trying to get some answers about a guy who was under supervision and going through a drug testing program and ended up back in jail and never saw the results of the drug test. And seems like you should see that if you're going to get thrown in jail. And so far, it's the Department of Alternative Sentencing. We're working on getting an interview, but they canceled that. So
it's kind of scary to think what cities and counties or certain public officials could get away with if there was not somebody like you.
Well,
if there are certain cities with TV stations that don't do any of this.
Yeah, it's
so important.
It
goes unknown and unanswered.
Yeah. And, it, you know, it used to be, John, you talked about the history of things. Obviously, the newspaper used to do more of focused on investigative journalism.
Yeah.
The RGJ, they did great at that. But that's been pared down over the years, the staffing, you know. And so we are it in a lot of ways. When you talk about being the watchdog, you know, who's calling people on this? Who's going to, you know, find out why this sewer spill wasn't reported to the state like it should have and those kind of things, you know, and $9 million is handed over to a fiber optic company and disappears. And that went quiet until we stirred it up and started digging it up and asking questions, those kind of things. So it's just a vitally important role to play.
This is why you are such a true asset. You can never live. Geez. You can never leave Reno. You can never leave Reno. You can never retire, Joe.
I appreciate it. I enjoy doing it, too, is the big part of it, too, John.
Can you stay 15 more
Absolutely.
Minutes?
Absolutely. Oh, that's great.
Good. Good. You'll finally get to drink your coffee because we're getting texts, questions. Somebody is mentioning about how you were a longtime part of Sheep Dip, of all things. And I want to bring up,
that was great.
You were the reporter, tackling the poisoning of Lake Davis in the 90s.
Yeah.
And it hit me that I haven't heard anything about this recently, but it was huge, folks, in 1997 when the California Fish and Wildlife or Fish and Game dumped poison into Lake Davis and killed, well, they meant to kill the northern pike, but they killed everything.
Yeah.
And you were on that story constantly. So there's just one more segment with Joe Hart, and we'll take your questions right now, too. 775-884-9910. Got a break for Fox News and local news with Greg Neft. And then we're back shortly, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk. John Potter here with Joe Hart, FM News Talk time, 1030.
Live, local, FM Talk, KKFT, for Smith and Mason Valley, 92.3 FM Talk.
Anybody else have anything they want to share today?
This is where to say it. Call now at 884-9910.
Welcome back, friends. Welcome back, John Potter, live and local. It's Joe Hart from News 4 for one more segment, and we're getting calls, so let's go to them again, 884-9910. Ron is calling from Reno. Question for Mr. Joe Hart. Hey, Ron. Good morning. Glad you called. Go ahead, sir.
Hey, I'm originally from Fallon, so I travel to and Fallon quite often. But the thing I can't believe and hasn't been taken care of for years is the amount of litter between Reno and USA Parkway. It's unbelievable. And Joe, can you tell me anything about it? Have you investigated that, or is anybody you know of?
You know, I think one of the issues that we've come across looking into that in the past is that that roadway is narrow out there, and NDOT says it's very dangerous to clean up. They just don't have the access out there that they'd like.
This is by Lockwood, isn't it?
Anywhere between Sparks and USA Parkway, the whole thing is just a mess.
Yeah, I heard there's a homeless camp hidden away from, you can't really see them from 80, but where Joe is talking about where the 80 is narrow, where I can't see where they could widen it like they're talking about, but there is a group there, and but I haven't seen the trash. Where do you exactly see the trash on this route to USA?
Well, apparently you don't travel that because it doesn't make any difference where you look. It is everywhere. I mean,
yeah, I've heard a lot of complaints about it, and it's a challenge for NDOT. I'll tell you that they have a challenge with getting out there without stopping traffic, without delaying traffic anymore to do cleanup. So I think it's a balancing act for them. Kim Burrows, you mentioned, she is working on a story right now about some of the homeless camp population out there where you're talking about, John, out by almost Lockwood, but between Sparks and Lockwood.
Well, it's a real danger because some of them, now I have seen a couple of bicyclists on 80 of all places going on alongside 80. I'm thinking, what are bicyclists doing there? I think one was killed or a pedestrian was killed just recently walking along 80 in that area, I think from between Mustang and Lovelock.
Yeah. Kim's been doing some coverage on that, and I think she has a story that's going to air Monday that they're putting a little more focus on addressing that now.
They're on it. Look at that.
Yes.
Ron, thanks for calling. As for what you can do about it, I wish we could be in charge and solve.
Until they expand that road, I think it's going to be a challenge for NDOT.
I know, and they're so hesitant, really, to disturb some of these camps for whatever reason. Okay, so another Ask Joe story. Is the broadband internet scam involving the real estate company in Reno? What was it called?
The company was called Uprise.
Uprise, okay. And this was a lot of money. right? How much was this?
$9 million, John.
He's shaking his head.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a taxpayer, you just got to shake your head at this one. But the state handed this money over to this company, Uprise, and said, go install this fiber optic project out
for,
in Lubbock.
For a rural area. Yeah,
and then the federal government was going to kick in like $23 million. But Nevada had to put the money up first. They did. And the money's gone, you know, that's when we got involved.
How could you spend all of that? But this guy, I think he fessed up to it. And
well, he's been charged with it. I think it's like 30 felonies that the Attorney General's office did charge him. And so his trial isn't until, I don't think, June of 2027. And then there's a civil case as well. He's being sued by another contractor. So it's a mess. It just is going to take some time to work through at this point. But serious charges, 30 felonies of theft, you know.
And it'll probably go on forever and everything. But, yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because I haven't seen an update on that for about 2 years now.
Yeah.
That's unreal.
So hopefully the state, with that, they won't tell us, but hopefully they've redone their processes, so procedures, so they don't hand over $9 million again with upfront.
All right, somebody texting that you were a... let me see here. You were a longtime part of Sheep Dip.
Oh, loved Sheep Dip.
Now, what happened to Sheep Dip? And by the way, what is Sheep Dip for the newcomers out there?
Sheep Dip was it's an only in Reno, only in Nevada kind of thing, a show the community would put together, and skits and all kinds of fun, making fun at the news of the past year and the people in the news.
You did skits, Joe?
I did. Well, yes, they were. I did. My part was minimal, but I enjoyed it. And it, you know what? I'll tell you what. There's a lot of talent in the community. I mean, I thought it was a very entertaining show. They would sell tickets, and then all the money would go to charity each year. So it was a great program. For years, it was over the Nugget Showroom, and then it moved around a little bit. Dave Finley from Channel 4, weatherman, was big into Sheep Dip. Ron Smith. These guys were great, talented.
Mike Alger, I think.
Yeah, he was good. There's a lot of talent, and there's a lot of material every year, you know, to make fun. It was almost kind of a Saturday Night Live kind of thing where you're just poking fun at people in the news, and it was all for a good cause. So
how could this end?
You know what? That's a great question. I was sorry to see it end. I think basically ticket sales dropped and audiences dropped, and not as many people are going to those kind of live shows. And I think the younger generation, unfortunately, you know, didn't embrace Sheep Dip
But Sheep Dip was mainly an older,
The demographic, if you want to say.
The guys who had been on radio in the 50s and 60s here, I know they were in on it.
And Ron Smith, and, you know. I think Ron's he's almost 90, I think, and he's wonderful and talented. And
he does the balloon race announcing.
Balloon races, a lot of local theater. But it was a funny, entertaining show. The governor would come and accept an award and jest, you know, and was always a good spirit about it, except for Governor Gibbons. He was the only one that didn't come to the show. But all the other governors would be there. And other state officials. It was a neat thing for the community. I was blessed to have a little part in it that people would.
What skit did you do?
Oh, we just did. They had kind of an Ask Joe segment where we would go off the rails on certain topics.
Joe goes off the rails,
fracking.
But it was fun and good crowds. I always thought, and so it was too bad to see it go.
Craig, did you say something?
The one that sticks into my mind is the fracking.
Fracking, yes,
You made jokes of fracking?
Yes. Just think about substituting another F word.
Yeah, there's a lot of places you could go with that, and I was sorry to say that my mom was in the front row for that show. She had to hear it.
Look at Joe's blushing himself right now.
All for charity, all for a good cause. That's what you had to remember.
All right, you and I have both done stories on Reno's historic River Inn, the old Lawton Hot Springs resort that was abandoned for decades on West 4th by the river. Then about, I think, 9 years ago, a couple from California bought it. And this guy, he's been fighting with neighbors ever since. They came on this show, as a matter of fact, and I did the River Inn story on Channel 2 before you did. But
he had the scoop.
Yeah. Well, Lawrence and Donna own. How are they?
Dana Miller. Lawrence and Dana.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Good. How are they? What's the latest on the historic River Inn?
I'll tell you what. If you want to ask how they are, they're so frustrated.
You know?
Still?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And I'm not taking sides in this debate, this controversy, because right. It's become very controversial with neighbors. But I think they just feel like they have hit a wall at every turn with their plans. The city's stance is the city has regulations you got to follow, you know.
Well, but Joe, this is why I was shocked that somebody would buy it, because the railroad, you can have any kind of business, but you can't have vehicles drive over the railroad track.
Yeah.
And the railroad track is right there in front of the parking lot. And there's no way that you can get around that.
No.
It's basically railroad property.
Well, and the railroad track's on one side and then the Truckee River on the other.
Right.
With a big, huge dirt lot.
They can't make a viable business. And not only that, what are the neighbors upset about? Because I think they've been renting it out for parties or what?
I think in the beginning when they moved in, then maybe there was some noise complaints, because there's a neighborhood right across the river,
mm-hmm.
and they were used to having this property quiet.
Right.
So they did. There were, a lot of complaints were filed with the city. This is going back years now. Then it resulted in a lawsuit. The neighbors sued Lawrence and Dana, the owners of the River Inn. They countersued. The neighbors said they were harassing them online or something. So this lawsuit goes for a couple years, and then it settled. And they announced a settlement, and this was 6 months ago. And then we've learned the settlement still hasn't been signed. So this may still go to trial at this point. There's still a chance. But this ugly Hatfield and McCoy neighborhood dispute, they are having trouble getting it resolved.
What's the latest on what they're going to do with the River Inn?
Well, Lawrence and Dana say that they're just going to keep pushing ahead, trying to fix it up, make small little improvements here and there. They have like a little Christmas party, cookie exchange, and do those kind of things, but not on the scale at this point of what they had hoped, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they wanted maybe to rent out some campsites and have people be able to stay there, and it doesn't look like that's going to happen in any capacity.
It's their residence, too, isn't it?
Yeah, they actually now live up in a different part of town, and so they're not living there, but they're trying to, you know, they're trying to fix it up and piecemeal it and just make it a nicer thing. I think their goal is something the community could come enjoy, little open houses kind of thing someday, but it's just been challenging every step of the way, and as we so often see, it ends up in court, and that's where it is now.
It's one of those places that make you wish. Now, I came here in 1977. It was closed before then, but it's one of those places that makes you say to yourself, gosh, I really missed out on all those old pictures of people getting rooms and hanging out by the pools with food and drinks, and people had weddings there. And
It was a big spot. It was a fun time, and they had a huge swimming pool, and it was really a gathering spot. And I think that's why this story, it really generates a lot of interest whenever we do updates or post things. And part of it is, I think it's a property rights issue. You know, should these people be able to do what they want to do, or the regulations, you know, dictate that. And then the other part is just the nostalgic history of it. You know, old Reno back in the day when it was, you know, this was fun and this was this spot where people went to, you know, have a lavish weekend and enjoy life. And it was the good old days.
I went out there right when they bought it and walked around the place. There had to have been 300 broken windows there. The vandals really picked the place apart. They took every little piece of brass from the property and everything like that. So, you know, at least it's better now than what it used to be.
For
it was
sure.
so depressing to pass by it when it was just abandoned.
No, it is, and credit to Lawrence and Dana for doing that work. But
mm-hmm.
there's regulations you have to follow, and the city, it's made it very challenging to move forward.
Joe, can you stay 10 more minutes?
This is great.
Ten more minutes.
I enjoy it.
Okay, good.
All right,
because I have more to talk about.
All right.
So many Ask Joe stories. If you had to put a number to it, how many have you done now?
Oh, my gosh.
Ask Joe.
You know, I mean,
you've been here 29 years.
Yeah.
We'll get the calculator out. We'll do this during the commercial. But, folks, if you have a question for Joe Hart from News 4, 775-884-9910, text it, too, if you'd like. I'm John Potter, live and local, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk, FM News Talk, time 1048.
There is no need for you to speak unless I ask you a question.
FM Talk, radio, 99.1, KKFT. For Smith and Mason Valley, 92.3 FM Talk.
All right, I promise. Last segment, Joe, I promise. Let's go to the phone. Steve calling from Reno, 99.1 FM Talk, talking to Joe Hart from News 4. Hi, Steve. Go ahead, please.
Thanks. This goes along with the Truckee River Inn or whatever it was. How the about the Bird Eye Inn? They used to always be mentioned in the same broadcast. And the reason it came to mind is I drove that road that goes up from Keystone, and now it connects all the way out to Bird Eye. And there's some very nice houses on the, I think it's the Reno side, but on the hill that overlooks Bird Eye. And that Bird Eye Inn was a dinner house. It was very, very popular.
Oh, I know the place he's talking about. Yes. You're right by the Sasquatch coffee shop. Right next door is Joe. Classic old. It looked like kind of like the Munster's house with a lot of fancy, classy little touches all over it. I think the color was pink to begin with. And it was like a three-story steakhouse. And you could just picture cowboys pulling up their wagons in front. It was a classic building. And that thing has been rotting away, empty also, the old Bird Eye Inn in the little town of Bird Eye, right in the center.
I think I can picture it driving through the town there.
Joe's going to cover this.
We'll see what's going on there.
He's going to check it out. Man, you just brought back a great memory, Steve. I appreciate your call. Thank you.
Thank you.
I mentioned earlier this morning about you covered the poisoning of Lake Davis, 1997, California Fish and Game dumped chemicals into Lake Davis to get rid of the non-native northern pike, and the doofuses killed everything in the lake, and I think some people got sick, too, and the poisons that they dumped, it ended up going down the Grizzly Creek, heading toward Sacramento, the Feather River, I think. What the heck were they thinking? And, Joe, have you heard anything recently about Lake Davis?
No.
It's not that bad because people still go there and fish in it.
Yeah, I think it recovered, and the fact that there isn't a lot of news is probably good. I haven't heard anything about any issues or complications. I remember back in the day they used this chemical called rotenone. Yeah, I do remember that because this is going back a ways. But it was fish and game, and it was almost like a military scene. They were all, armed with rifles up there and everything and ready for anybody to try to stop them. But they had to eradicate the northern pike. They thought they were just going to take over the California waterways. So they poisoned, and they knew they were going to kill off everything. I don't know if any people were injured or became sick. I never heard that. But it was the deal. They just had to kill off everything and start over, and that's what they did. And I think, however many years later now, I think things are fine, and people go up to Lake Davis and enjoy it, and there's no pike to worry about. But that was unpleasant for sure.
Yeah. Well, listen, I know that you love the city. You are a true defender of it. I remember when you had the back window of your vehicle shot out. Somebody shot out the back window of your vehicle
at the wrong time.
Kitsky and Vassar, and people online, Joe, were going, oh my gosh, the crime here, it's like New York. And Joe comes on the Facebook or whatever, and Joe goes, well, Joe downplayed it. And Joe says, well, it's no big thing.
I mean, it was a big thing to me because it was a stray bullet. Somebody was chasing somebody else.
Oh, you found out what the...
But I don't think they ever caught them. But the bullet went through the back window and lodged in my headrest next to me.
So oh, my gosh.
A foot away. It was crazy.
So but
was
the thing that impressed me, Joe, is you didn't join in the chorus of this, oh, the crime is terrible. It's like New York City.
No.
And Joe was like, calm down, and here he is with a bullet in his headrest. It's just incredible. Anyway, you know what? You have a great staff at News 4. You really do. It's what a great staff. I hope it never changes there. Okay.
John, I feel the same. We, you know, it's from the top down, our general manager, Amy Chapman, you know, she sets the tone and the direction, and our news director, Melissa Carlson, and she's wonderful. And then, like, you know, we were talking earlier, just our young staff members and more experienced. We have a great newsroom, and NSN is great too. And it's just a wonderful operation. We just, you know, we just serve the community every day in all these different ways, covering sports, asking questions.
It's missing one thing. This great journalist who was at Channel 2 for 20 years, Joe. 20 years I spent most of my life in Nevada. And look at me, I don't even cut my hair anymore.
You are missed, my friend.
I haven't worn a necktie in, how long has it been? 3 years.
Lucky you, I would say, to that. Hey, you, never say never, right? Maybe you'll pop back up on the TV airwaves.
I'm plotting my big comeback. Anytime somebody leaves that Channel 2 morning show, I think this is it. They're going to call me. My comeback is imminent. All right. Anyway, it's been fun talking to you. It always is fun talking with you. And I'll tell Kathy you said hi.
Definitely.
And your kids, that's awesome that your son is working at News 4.
Yeah, so it makes me proud.
What does he want to do eventually there?
You know, I think he's still trying to figure it out. He's looking at some opportunities in other markets, bigger markets. And so he's 26 right now. He's a producer. And so he may continue on at the station, and he may head out and see, you know, what's on the horizon. So
well, you got to be proud. And your daughter?
So proud.
A teacher?
Yeah, she just finished her grad program, so she's going to be, Emily's going to be an elementary school teacher in the fall, so she'll start applying. It's a two-year program at UNR she just went through for the graduate program. Right. So,
listen, my friend, God bless you.
Thanks, John. Thanks for having me in. It's so fun to talk about, and good to see you.
Yeah, God bless News 4. I'm John Potter, going to break for Fox News. Be back after that, 99.1, 92.3 FM Talk.